South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Katie Switalski-Munoz, filling in for Tom Hudson. It's finally here. The very first doses of the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine were kept cold, really cold, and delivered to South Florida hospitals. What questions do you have about the COVID-19 vaccine? Will you get it once it's widely available to the public? Call us at 800-743-WLRN. 800-743-9576. You can also tweet us at WLRN. Veronica Zaragovia covers all things healthcare and COVID-19 for WLRN, and she joins us now. Thanks for joining the program, Veronica.
Thanks, Katie, for having me.
Let's start with some of the basics. How does the Pfizer vaccine actually work in your body?
So remember that the coronavirus, which is called SARS-CoV-2, is studded with these spike proteins that it uses those to enter human cells. And so the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine uses what's called messenger RNA or mRNA, and it's an instruction for a cell on how to make a piece of that spike protein that's unique to this coronavirus. And that little piece will then generate the body to create antibodies to those and fight it off if you are actually exposed to the coronavirus.
Is that how Moderna's vaccine or Johnson & Johnson's vaccine works as well?
Well, the Moderna vaccine also uses the mRNA technology. I do want to say something quickly I didn't add before, that keep in mind that messenger is actually like getting an email, or Tom Frieden, who is the former director of the CDC, he said it's kind of like Snapchat, if you're familiar with the application, the messaging application. This message will come in and it'll disappear after a short time. So Moderna uses a similar technology. Then Johnson & Johnson and AstraZeneca vaccines, they use a modified virus. It's called the adenovirus that causes the common cold, and they kind of change the genetics of it. And when it enters your body, it also triggers your body to create antibodies and fight it like foot soldiers, is what doctors have told me to think of antibodies like. So, and the most of these vaccines require two shots. The Johnson & Johnson one will only require one. So that's another big difference. And also just the temperatures at which they need to be stored are different.
And so there's just been a lot of headlines about the vaccine this week. What stuck out to you the most? What's the basic, most important information that people need to know now that the vaccine is actually here?
Well, like you mentioned, it's remarkable that we're even at this point. So that was like the biggest thing, is not to let that slip away, you know, that we're at this point where the vaccinations have begun and that this new technology, it's not a new, mRNA has been around for a long time, for decades, but that the FDA has approved this vaccine using that technology, that healthcare workers at hospitals dealing with patients who have COVID-19 have been inoculated or are getting inoculated this week, and that people who live and work at long-term care facilities are also getting their first shot. And but there's a lot about the state's vaccination plans that we don't know. So people will need to be patient with that as plans get rolled out. One thing I can say that we do know is what are lies that are going around, or false information on social media, that I just want to make sure people are aware, as I mentioned, that the mRNA technology is not new, that it's been around for a long time, that the mRNA vaccine cannot impact your DNA, and it does not have live virus. So you cannot get COVID-19 from this vaccine. And there's also a lie going around that the head of research at Pfizer said that this could cause female sterilization because of a spike protein, and that's just totally false. This person never made such a claim, and that's just not possible for a person to be sterilized because of this vaccine. And so, yeah, that's something I just wanted to make sure listeners are aware.
And I'm glad you brought that up, Veronica, the idea that this this vaccine just teaches your cells how to fight this type of protein. It doesn't actually contain the virus. I'm curious, what have you been hearing from major hospitals, including Memorial Healthcare, Jackson Health? Have you heard about their strategies on how they're going to communicate information to the public?
Well, those two hospitals, because they're two of the five teaching hospitals throughout the state that received the first dosages of the vaccine, they had press conferences at which staff workers were inoculated publicly so people could see that it was safe, that they weren't experiencing any major side effects. And so in that regard, I know that that they will make themselves very accessible to the media to talk about any concerns, but they have their hands full with taking care of patients who are sick. A lot of we are seeing an uptick again, and so a lot of that responsibility about messaging will fall on state and county government, on advertisements through, maybe paid for not by nonprofits, or you know, doctors being accessible on the radio. Maybe next year we'll see local celebrities getting the vaccine through social media. So I think the hospitals will do some of it, but not all of it.
And when it comes to people that have concerns about how quickly this vaccine was produced, what are you hearing from people who are nervous to get the vaccine? What are their concerns?
Right. Their concern may come from, unfortunately, the name of Operation Warp Speed that makes people get the sense that this was just, you know, that corners were cut. And that's what I'm hearing concerns about. But the reality is that the vaccine manufacturers went through three trial phases, and that's standard. And there was so much money and so much collaboration among companies, among governments. I mean, this was like overseas collaborations. Even Pfizer worked with BioNTech, which is a German company. And so there wasn't, corners weren't cut. It was just so much money, and even, you know, like the DNA of the coronavirus that was shared by scientists in China. So it's just been a global partnership that has made this way faster than other vaccines for other illnesses.
We're talking with WLRN's health reporter Veronica Zaragovia about the historic week as the first vaccines for the coronavirus have been doled out. I'm Katie Switalski-Munoz in for Tom Hudson, and you're listening to the South Florida Roundup. We want to hear from you. Call us at 800-743-WLRN. That's 800-743-9576. You can also tweet us at WLRN. Veronica, what are the challenges in making sure that people return for the second or the booster shot if they're getting the Pfizer or Moderna vaccines?
You know, that's a really important, because people getting one, you need to come back for that second booster shot. If it's a Pfizer vaccine that you've gotten, it's a 3-week period between the two. And then if it's Moderna, it's going to be 4 weeks. And I haven't heard anything official about the kind of database that will be available to those who are administering the vaccine to check, you know, so-and-so got the first shot on this date and will need to come back and has an appointment to come back on that date. So we're all waiting to hear more about that. And I've heard Dr. Alina Alonso, who directs the Department of Health in Palm Beach County, mentioned that it'll be like we can envision a card where both appointments will be set at once, so you'll know when your first appointment is, and then you need to come back for that one. But it will be a challenge to make sure that people do return.
What have you heard about how the public will have access to this vaccine? Do you think that there will be disparities in who gets which vaccine as more types of the vaccines become available, whether it's Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson?
You know, I spoke to Jason Fernandez, who's a captain with Miami-Dade Fire Rescue, and he said this is going to involve a big partnership between private entities and the government. So we will see, for instance, CVS, Walgreens, Walmart, Publix offer the vaccine. And then you should also picture it like the big places where you can go get tested, that there may be a drive-through line or a walk-up space for people to come get the vaccine. And people are going to need to stay around for about 15 minutes to make sure that they haven't had any kind of reaction. But I think the problem is that the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, for instance, is less so far, I mean, it hasn't finished and it hasn't been approved yet. But what we know is that it's not as effective as Moderna and Pfizer. And because it's only one shot, it might be that some people will get that one. For instance, migrant workers who might not be around 3 to 4 weeks later. So unfortunately, we don't know all the specifics, but I do worry about inequalities and access to the vaccines.
Thank you for joining us, Veronica. Veronica Zaragovia is WLRN's health reporter. You've been covering all things COVID-19 for us. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And WLRN's been asking listeners how the pandemic has affected their holiday plans.
Hey, my name's Diego, and I am in the Coral Gables area in Florida. My Christmas plans were pretty straightforward. We were going to drive to North Carolina to visit family, including my fiancés and myself, so it's a pretty large group. That's changed, of course, due to the virus currently. We're not going to be seeing most of the family, and the family that we do see is getting tested before we all see each other, and then other family members that we will see, we're still going to plan bonfires and things that we can do outside.
We want to hear from you. Share your stories on our social media. Tag us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at WLRN. Still to come, some of the first places to get vaccines in the state includes a senior living community in Broward County. We'll keep answering your vaccine questions and hear from healthcare workers who received their first dose. You can call us at 800-743-WLRN. Katie Spitalski-Munoz in for Tom Hudson. Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. We want to hear your vaccine questions, and you can call us at 800-743-WLRN. That's 800-743-9576. And we've been hearing from more listeners at WLRN on how the pandemic has affected their holiday plans.
Hi, I'm Cassandra Barrett. I'm a 22-year-old student at Northeastern University. I'm originally from Miami, Florida, and even during the pandemic, I will still be flying home to see my family. I haven't been in Miami since August. I still feel very confident about going home. I get tested at school 3 times a week, and when I get home, I will be quarantining and also getting tested in Miami. This year definitely looks different for the holidays. I won't be seeing my friends and my family, like, once I land. I won't be going to Pinecrest Bakery straight from the airport. I am being more cautious about who I see and what I do, just to keep myself safe and my family safe so I can have a safe and happy Christmas.
In Florida, hospitals and some select long-term care facilities are where the first doses of the Pfizer vaccine were delivered this week, and facilities wasted no time in starting to inoculate healthcare workers. Dr. Hansel Tooks is an internal medicine physician at Jackson Health with a focus on infectious diseases. He received his first dose of the vaccine on Tuesday, and he joins us now. Thank you for joining the program, Dr. Tooks.
Thanks, Katie.
What were you feeling when you received your first dose of the COVID-19 vaccine? Put us in that moment with you. What were your emotions?
You know, so the interesting thing is that even though I am somebody who, you know, has pioneered needle exchange, I'm actually scared of needles. So there's that. And you can see that in my eyes when the photos were taken when I got the vaccine. But, you know, on a serious note, really what I was feeling was hope. For the first time, hope that the end of the pandemic is near. I definitely felt privileged to be among the first people in Miami to receive the vaccine. I was very grateful that Jackson chose me. I was very interested in getting the vaccine in a public way because I wanted to convey my confidence in the vaccine and that sense of hope to both my colleagues, my patients, and the greater Miami community.
Did you feel like this was a historic moment in that mix of emotions? I'm curious what you were focused on.
Absolutely historic. You know, a moment like this is a moment that will usher in the beginning of the end of what has been really a worldwide struggle and, you know, we will have repercussions from the mental effects of this pandemic for many years to come. But I did feel that this was a historic occasion, and I was really happy to be part of it at Jackson, where I trained. And, Jackson serves our city, our minority communities, the diverse diaspora of Miami. And I'm very happy that people who look like me, Black physicians, are getting the vaccine publicly so that we can convey our trust in the science and our belief that this will lead to the end of the pandemic to the Miami community.
And you've been especially outspoken on social media about getting other Black people to get the vaccine and to trust it. Do you think that that outreach is not being addressed enough now that the vaccine is actually here?
You know, I think that it has been, I think that a lot of people are stepping up. I definitely felt in that moment as well that I was being a public health leader, and that's why I wanted to be a part of it. I think that the first person to get the vaccine in our country was a Black ICU nurse. Kizzy, the scientist in Dr. Fauci's lab, a Black woman, helped develop the technology. I think that the U.S. healthcare system, you know, all structures and systems have caused so much harm to Black communities through the years. So the distrust in the vaccine is completely understandable. But at the same time, we can't allow all of the vestiges of the horrors of Tuskegee and the HeLa cells and all of the historically terrible things that have happened to our ancestors to prevent us from taking part in this historic opportunity to lead towards health equity. So I was really excited to be part of it, and I'm encouraging all of my patients, friends, family, and all of Miami to get the vaccine when they're up.
And you mentioned that this kind of feels like the beginning of the end of the pandemic. And we've heard that a lot this week. But healthcare workers especially have seen the real toll of this pandemic in the hospitals, at the doctor's offices, in the ICUs. And I'm curious what you would say to people that still doubt this pandemic.
Well, that's really hard to believe that there are people in this country who still haven't been affected by the pandemic, who don't know somebody who got COVID, somebody who's died of COVID. You know, I think of it like the opioid epidemic. At first, it seemed like a distant healthcare crisis, but then everybody knows somebody who's been affected by that. The stories of the nurses from Middle America, where people were dying and proclaiming that COVID was a hoax, it's truly unbelievable, and just a result of the failure of leadership from Washington. This pandemic could not have been handled any worse. And for that reason, we have a lot of pandemic deniers, but that's normal in science. There's still people who deny that HIV exists. But I can tell you with certainty that these things do exist, and we all need to continue to wear masks, wash our hands, social distance, because the end is in sight now. That's why it's hopeful. The end is in sight. If we can all just hold together for a few more months, we'll get past this.
We've got a question from a listener on Twitter who asks about the FDA approval process and, you know, what is holding up the final approval and how long will it take for some of the different vaccines?
Right. So the Pfizer vaccine, which I received, is actually not approved. It's under emergency use authorization. I know that, you know, it will be some months after the approval in order to get after the authorization to get the official approval. Our FDA is very deliberative in how they make their decisions, and that's a good thing. They want to make sure that our country's safe, and we should have confidence in the FDA. Actually, one of my colleagues that I trained with at Jackson is part of the team at the FDA that's doing the evaluation of the coronavirus vaccines. So we have Pfizer approved, or Pfizer with emergency use authorization. Moderna will follow shortly, and after that, I think next up will be Johnson & Johnson. But these things take time. These things take time.
And we've got the same listener on Twitter, you know, mentioning that they're 67, and in 2021 they are planning on taking the pneumonia vaccine and the shingles vaccine. Now they also need the COVID-19 vaccine. And this listener asks, can I take them all at once, or do I need to spread them out?
That's a really good question. I do believe that the CDC is recommending against co-administration of the COVID vaccine with the flu shot. I actually haven't looked into the other vaccines, but most likely when people receive the COVID vaccine, if it's the Pfizer, they'll be going to a facility. I think the recommendation is to get the COVID vaccine solo, but that doesn't mean that a couple of weeks later, the listener can't return to get those other very important and very effective vaccines.
And I'm curious how you're feeling a few days after receiving the vaccine. Have you experienced any side effects?
Okay, so I feel great. So beyond the fact that I feel vaccinated and I feel the euphoria of being one of the first people to receive this vaccine, I was watching TV that night, as we all do now since we're at home, and I reached for the remote and my arm did hurt. My arm got sore. And the next morning, the soreness persisted. And by midday, it was gone. And I haven't felt anything since that time. No systemic symptoms. Really, all I'm feeling is hopeful.
What does it mean for you to receive your first of two shots? What does it mean for your career, for your job, for how you see this?
So, interestingly, I am actually on paternity leave right now.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm a new dad, and I am about to return to work in 2 weeks. I do the hospital wards at Jackson, so I take care of people on the inpatient medicine service. And this adds an extra degree of certainty that I will remain healthy when I'm doing my job, so that I can help raise my beautiful daughter. And also just with the decreased likelihood of becoming infected, the fact that I'm protecting my daughter and my family when I come home from work, I think that there is definitely, we're entering the worst stage of the pandemic right now. We're going to see 3,000 deaths a day as regular tragedy for the next few months. And I am eager to get back to work, to go back to helping our community hands-on on the front line. But at the same time, it's more important than ever for me to remain healthy and keep my little baby girl healthy. So I'm so privileged to have received this vaccine, and I will be partially immune when I go back to work in 2 weeks.
And stick with us, Dr. Tooks, in case we get other questions about this vaccine. I'd love to have you stick around. I'm Katie Spitalski-Munoz, in for Tom Hudson. You're listening to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN, and we want to hear from you. What questions about the vaccine do you have? Call us at 800-743-WLRN. That's 800-743-9576. Or you can tweet us at WLRN. Joining us now is Mark Rayner, the Director of Healthcare Services at John Knox Village, a senior living community in Pompano Beach. John Knox Village has several levels of care, including independent living, assisted living, and skilled nursing. The skilled nursing section, where residents need more care and are considered higher risk, they receive the vaccine first. Other residents are still waiting. Mark works directly with residents and received his vaccine earlier this week. Mark, thank you for joining us on the program.
Good afternoon. Thank you. A pleasure to be here.
How did John Knox Village approach you about the possibility of getting vaccinated this week?
So we actually were called up from the Department of Health that is part of the governor's strike team. And we were selected prior to CVS and Walgreens as a skilled nursing center in Broward County. Broward County and Pinellas County are two areas in the state that had the highest concentration of skilled nursing centers. And we were quite flattered that we were chosen to be the first skilled nursing center as part of a life plan community. And we were the first in Broward County. From what I understand, Florida was first in the country. So our elders and staff were selected. We got the phone call that they were going to come this Wednesday, and we began the process of getting all the consents and preparing our community to be a part of this wonderful program.
And as you mentioned, that some other long-term care facilities in most of Florida are still waiting. Broward and Pinellas were chosen for a vaccination pilot program to start the state off. What was going through your mind when you found out about this?
I actually was very excited. We had already registered to the CVS program, and we were ready for the vaccine. We had been educating our staff on the wonderful possibilities of us being one of the first communities. So, you know, we actually have been very fortunate. We have the only greenhouse model of care in the state of Florida. where we have individual homes with all private suites. So each one of our elders has their own private room. That, along with the diligence, with full PPE equipment, weekly testing, we've only had one elder who contracted the COVID virus in our setting in the entire pandemic, and that elder has fully recovered. So we're quite proud of our results. We think that's one of the reasons we were chosen to be the first in the pilot study.
And Mark, have you just been inundated, or has management at John Knox Village been inundated with questions from residents about when and how they can get this vaccine?
I wouldn't say that we were inundated with it. Everyone knew that the vaccine was on the way, and we were kind of all waiting patiently. As I said, we've taken a very direct, matter-of-fact approach, even with our visitation. When visitation was allowed, we have scheduled appointments in designated areas. Families have to wear full protective equipment with the mask, the gown, and the shield, and along with our staff. We do screening at the gate. So, you know, we've tried to make it as normal as possible with our elders and interact with their families, but yet at the same time work diligently to keep this virus out of our community.
And we've still got Dr. Tooks from Jackson Health with us, and we've got a caller on the line with a question. Michael in Delray Beach joins us. Hi, Michael, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I used to be on your predecessor show, The Topical Currents.
Thanks for joining us again.
And Richard told me they finally painted the room where we used to be in, which is great, but you understand that. Doctor, I understand that it still hasn't been determined how long the vaccine will last in the human body. Are you aware of any determination that it'll only last a year and you'll need a booster after a year or 6 months or any particular time period?
That's a great question, Michael. So the beautiful graph where it shows the rate of new infection in people who are vaccinated, which is very low, versus the people who got placebo, only goes for 4 months. So at this time, we know that people are protected for 4 months. Part of the reason that there's just the emergency use authorization is that we don't have the timetables. We don't know how long the antibody response lasts, how long, whether or not people will need boosters after a year. That's all to be determined. But right now, we know that for at least 4 months, people are protected.
Good enough. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Michael. We've also got Sandra in Royal Palm Beach. Are you online with us, Sandra?
Yes, I am.
What's your question?
My question is this. In the past, when I have received the flu vaccine, I began to develop Bell's palsy, and I received medical care. Am I not a candidate for this vaccine?
That is a very good question. I actually don't know the answer. I would have to look at the guidance. But really, the people who we are dissuading against getting the vaccine now are people who have had severe allergic reactions, so anaphylaxis. I don't think that a Bell's palsy that has responds to treatment would be a contraindication. But I would actually have to get back to you on that.
Okay. So I should speak with my physician.
That's the answer I was going for. Speak with your physician before you get it. Absolutely.
Well, keep up the good work. And let's hope Joe Biden does better than his predecessor.
Amen.
Thanks for calling, Sandra. We're still with Mark Rayner from John Knox Village. And I'm just curious, I'd like to hear what was going through your mind while you were receiving your first dose of the vaccine.
Well, actually, it was definitely excitement, and we had a very, very busy day on Wednesday. As we were simultaneously having staff on our first floor common areas, we had a touchdown space set up. We had close to 90 employees and 80 of our elders, and again, in this high-rise with the individual homes, the strike teams were going up and at the same time all getting the vaccine. We also had a huge media response. We had all the national networks here, and then ultimately the governor did, around 1 o'clock, he came and did a press conference here at John Knox Village. So I was very excited. The vaccine has been being given throughout the day earlier. I think I was probably around 12:30 when I got the vaccine. So, again, I was excited. I was not apprehensive whatsoever. I've done the research. Every one of our physicians who we offered to get the vaccine, they were very excited. They came and they got the vaccine also. So, you know, it was a great day all around.
And it doesn't sound like you're afraid of needles. Have you experienced any side effects since receiving the vaccine?
No, I did not. When I went home, probably about 7 o'clock last night when I took my suit off, a little bit of tenderness at the injection site in my upper left shoulder, which is to be expected. I took two Aleve, and you know, the next one I was fine. It had subsided in a very short period of time, and that was it. We had, I think, two nurses had a little bit of chills and some malaise, and then one nurse had a low-grade temperature, and we told her to just stay home and rest instead of coming in for the following shift. But that was it out of close to 180 people. We just had, two or three that had very minor side effects. And all of our elders were fine with no side effects. So that's truly amazing.
And you work directly with residents. I'm curious, does this vaccine change how you feel about going to work every day? Does it change the way you interact with your residents?
That's a great question. I've been blessed to be in healthcare 28 years. I've been at John Knoxville for 12 years. It's just a wonderful community, and we're like a family. We really are like a family here. And this, I've dedicated my life to this, to taking care of our seniors, and I've not been fearful one day to come to work even prior to this. I was asked, are we going to change our practices now that we've gotten the vaccine? And my answer to that right now is no. We still want to keep our personal protective equipment on and do social distancing. We've invested over $150,000 in KN95 masks and the shields and the gowns to do it the right way. And fortunately, we've got great outcomes and kept our elders safe here.
What questions have residents and their families been asking you?
Well, it's funny because we were very impressed with the fact that almost 90% of them said yes to the vaccine. There was no hesitation whatsoever. And again, leading up to this, they've been very thankful. You know, the toughest part of this COVID in our community was the fact that families weren't able to visit like they used to. We're a very robust community with lots of involvement, volunteers and family. And with the isolation and doing the protective measures, you know, that went from 100% down to virtually nothing for a while. Our staff has meaningful relationships, but it's not the same as not having your son or daughter or family member here with you. So that was the biggest piece is, you know, when can we get back to normal? So they've supported the process and been quite thankful for the results and us keeping their loved ones safe. I was very impressed with, I saw for sure when we said, okay, the visitation has to be scheduled. You have to work full people. Everyone's like, yeah, we get it. We want to abide by that and, you know, not be the person who contributed to someone getting the COVID.
Mark Rayner, Director of Healthcare Services at John Knox Village, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. Have a nice day.
And Dr. Tooks from Jackson Health, thank you for joining us and answering our questions.
Thank you.
WLRN has continued to ask listeners how the pandemic is affecting holiday plans.
My name is Aida Alejandra. I live in Upper East Side, Miami, and my family lives in Miami Lakes. I have a small immediate family, so it will just be the three of us this Nochebuena. Normally, pre-COVID, we would have attended Midnight Mass at the ancient Spanish monastery in North Miami Beach. It is a beautiful service, and it normally ends with the congregation all holding small white candles as we sing Silent Night. It is honestly magical. There is no other word to describe it. But it's indoors and it gets quite crowded, so we won't be attending this year. I don't know if I'm sad. I am happy my family's safe and healthy and that I'll be able to see them. But the holidays don't feel the same. But I still think we're quite lucky and I am still looking forward to Christmas.
Still to come on the South Florida Roundup, the owner of the beloved Miami Tavern in Wynwood, Gramps, on what policies he thinks could keep people safe and help small businesses. That's next. Katie Switalski-Munoz filling in for Tom Hudson. Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. 13,000. That's the state's highest daily case count this week, and it's the highest in a single day since July. At the same time, we're seeing photos of unmasked people close together drinking, a surge of people going out to bars and nightlife. The White House Coronavirus Task Force released a report that directly contradicts Governor Ron DeSantis. The report recommends limiting indoor dining and bar capacities and enforcing more strict mask policies. Adam Gersten joins us now. He is the owner of the beloved bar and tavern in Wynwood, Gramps. Thanks for coming on the program, Adam.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start first off with how are you feeling? I understand that you're home currently fighting COVID-19.
Yes, I hope my mom isn't listening, but I'm fine. I'm really fine. I'm on the tail end. I just had a little stuffiness and lost sense of smell. But other than that, I feel fine and just resting and making sure I don't get anyone else sick.
Has getting sick changed your perspective on how you run Gramps?
No, it's actually reinforced. It's actually reinforced it. I was very, very, very personally, vigilant. And, I feel like a couple moments of maybe having my guard down is probably what led to that happening. So I'm convinced that the way we're doing things, which is having people seated, walked into their tables separated, keep your mask on. You're only allowed inside to use the restroom. You know, customers are only allowed inside to use the restroom. And then, you know, as the guests interact, they're not really supposed to jump from table to table. And being real strict about that, I think, and being outdoors only, I think we're doing basically everything that we can based on what we've heard is the safest way to operate.
And you've kept these protocols in place that technically the state of Florida doesn't require of you anymore. Why is that? What made you keep those protocols in place?
I would not be looking to the state of Florida for advice on how to mitigate COVID in my operation. Other than in maybe the governor's mind, I think we're the laughing stock. So people look at us and go, what the hell is going on down here? So I kind of looked elsewhere for that.
Where did you get your advice from on sort of how to put these protocols together and what you knew you wanted to continue?
Well, I mean, you know, we had a more limited there were certain guidelines that were put out earlier that were more limited. You know, the outdoor stuff, I saw what was going on in other states that got the numbers way down, and you know, sort of looking at the CDC stuff and reading some of those sort of research articles about indoor spread and things like that, and obviously just the mask thing is so critical. I've talked to, you know, I was good about getting tested often, and every time I'd go to talk to nurses or doctors, you know, you see how many people they interact with, and some of them never got sick, and they're like, we just have our mask on. And so I think, you know, that's just starts with that, and you know, keeping people from jumping from their sort of safe pods to interact with other people that weren't necessarily wanting someone else to come talk to them. You know, I think that's the thing. You know, I was reading like Gloria Estefan talking about her getting COVID, and she's like, I've been diligent this whole time. And I go to one restaurant, one person comes to say something nice to me, and my guard is down. And that's the only moment I can think that someone was in my face that I wasn't with, you know, the whole time. So creating that atmosphere where you can try to keep people, allow people to have their people that they're with stay with them and not have people coming in to their space from the outside.
Have you had any pushback from customers?
You know, really rarely. I don't know if some of it has to do with the fact that a lot of our guests are people that are like family to us. And so I think people know where we're coming from before they get there. We've had, I was worried that the staff, you know, wasn't really going to be on board with this, the limited capacity and the sort of limited operation, but they've loved the compliments that they've received from the guests. So yeah, I mean, on the weekends, sometimes there are people that are just happen to be passing by and they come in and they're looking for the full on nightclub experience. They're not getting it from us. And that frustrates them, but that hasn't been very common at all. Mostly it's just been really positive response, thankfulness, you know, thankful that we're trying so hard and still being able to try to stay open.
Well, we've seen other news outlets report large unmasked crowds at bars and nightclubs all over South Florida. The Sun Sentinel published photos of people crowding establishments in Fort Lauderdale, Delray Beach, and Boca Raton. What's going through your mind as a business owner when you see people concerned about nightlife?
I mean, on the human level, you're just like, you know, you understand that everyone's thinking about feeding their families and employees feeding their families. I would say that, you know, we're keeping a good portion of our original staff employed on limited capacity and keeping people relatively safe and thinking more long term. And I think there's a way to do it. And I don't think all of that, what the way that those places are operating are necessary. I think it's prolonging the agony here. You know, I'm in that camp that I believe that full capacity unmasked is prolonging the agony, that we're not getting this under control. And, you know, I don't know. It's probably not the most popular point of view. There are definitely operators that I'm close with that hold the same point of view. Obviously there are some that don't. I think it makes us look bad. I think it makes it tough when we're out there looking for relief, not as sympathetic. You know, it's hard to, I think there's some people that say, well, why should this industry get help when they're just making our lives tougher? You know, it's tougher for us to get back to normal. I don't think that's fair either. You know, like I said, I mean, everybody's trying to survive also financially, and times are really horrible. So.
Yeah, let's talk about that financial help. I'm curious, you know, you mentioned you're able to keep most of your original staff employed at a limited capacity. How are you able to do that right now?
It's tough. You know, we've got everyone kind of working tight shifts, and we've maximized the space.
Have you applied for CARES Act funding?
Oh, I'm sorry. You're talking about for the on financial side?
Yes.
Yeah, so the problem with some of that is, so we got PPP money initially, but that was early on when it was only 8 weeks. Now we're just sort of waiting, but there's some programs to apply for through the city and county, but we're cut out of those. We're like carved out in a sort of weird arbitrary way, where because of our certificate of use, because we're a tavern, and that was what I applied for in 2012, I'm excluded from some county assistance. And then also at the city, the commission voted to put a cap on the gross revenue. So if you made over a certain amount in gross revenue, which has no, you know, bearing on what the bottom line is, or, you know, that money isn't flowing into my pocket. It's so we're cut out. We can't apply also to the city for any relief that's available through the CARES Act money. And all that's doing is basically just hurting everyone. You know, it's a weird sort of setup. It's sort of arbitrary, and I don't think it was really thought out so well. I understand that in theory they think, oh well, we're helping the smallest of the small businesses, the flip side of that is businesses that do more volume may have a lot more employees, and thus, you know, it's affecting people, a lot more families. Especially around the holidays. So it's something I really hope the city commission and the county commission revisit quickly.
Well, I'm curious, you know, as a small business owner, what do you need from the state government or the Department of Health or policy funding wise that you're not getting? What would make it easier for you and better for you to stay open right now?
Well, I mean, on one hand, I mean, obviously just getting numbers down would mean more even-handed enforcement. You know, it just makes a difference. You know, if you, it's like a whack-a-mole situation. I hate to use this so cliche, but it's true. It's like you attack there, you know, there's been so much energy sending code enforcement to Wynwood. We get pictures all day long of places open till, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning and restaurants packed with no masks. And so it's like, you know, I think a more consistent, even-handed, to get everyone on board, getting numbers down in the ICU beds and the hospitals less taxed, that would help, I guess, just in general, because then also people are less scared to go out. And then, yeah, this, I just think money to operate, you know, money to cover rent and bills and things like that. It relieves the amount of hours you need to, you know, there's the give and take. If you want less hours of operation, if you don't want to have people laid off, tons of people by the holidays, I don't know, you know. So I don't know if there's really a public health. I mean, I think we've seen that the will isn't there. So I don't really know, you know, the question's a tough one. What's left to try? I don't know.
Now, do you believe if Governor Ron DeSantis signed a statewide mask order that your customers would be turned off, or do you think it would make people feel safer?
No, I think I just think someone making a solid decision would be, I mean, a mask order is simple. It's like you wear the mask, it cuts down on transmission, and that's it. And you still get to go to your tavern, you still get to go to your club or whatever you're doing. I think the indoor stuff is a little tough. I'm not a supporter of it. And I think so. There's got to be more. You know, I think a mask mandate and the indoor stuff is real tough.
Now, what kind of crowds are you expecting for New Year's? Because I'm imagining in a normal year, you could be planning something. And I'm wondering if you're expecting the same amount of people or how this stage of the pandemic has changed your New Year's planning.
I have a very good answer for you. We decided yesterday we're not even going to open.
Wow.
Yeah. We're just going to let people do what they want to do to exorcise the demons of 2020 on their own. We're doing Christmas Eve off. Usually we're only Thanksgiving and Christmas that our staff's like, hey, let's just do our own thing. But this time I kind of threw out like, hey, what do you think? Should we even open? And I said, you know, sometimes it's disappointing anyway. Let's just be closed and have a killer, you know, January 1st. And so that's what we're going to do.
Yeah. What does January 1st look like for you?
I don't know. I think we'll, might have like a guest chef do a cool breakfast or something like that, or brunch type of thing. And, you know, some daytime programming, some probably just fun DJ or a band or something, and let people let's, you know, look ahead to 2021. And
Adam Gersten, we're gonna have to leave it there. Owner of the beloved tavern Gramps, thank you for joining us.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me. Bye.
And that'll do it for the South Florida Roundup. It's produced by Denise Royal. Our engagement editor is Katie Leprey. Lance Dixon is our digital editor. Our news director is Terrence Shepard. Alicia Zuckerman is our editorial director. WLRN's director of radio programming is Jason Zabka. The director of radio operations and the show's technical supervisor is Peter J. Meritz. Richard Ives answers phones. I'm Katie Spitalski-Munoz. Thank you for calling, asking us questions, and listening. This program is made possible by Willie the Bee Man, Bee Removal Specialist.